What if there was a way for your thoughts, your words, to be sent into the future and to be understood and appreciated by someone anywhere on the planet? Would that not make us, in a way, immortal and give us the power to communicate across time and space? I'm Bella St. John. Join us as we venture together to explore the history of those words, the history of the novel in A Novel Idea.
Well, now we're back for episode 2 of A Novel Idea, and in this episode we're going to look at chivalry. So, Professor, what are your thoughts with regard to chivalry in novels? Where would you like to start?
I would like to remind our listeners that here too, the roots of the chivalric literature is oral. And these were Celtic stories, old Celtic stories about local heroes. So in a way, they are a little bit closer to the Iliad, to these stories about warriors. But this time, the warriors are strong individuals. They are very, very strong individuals, and they have very, very high standards of morality and chivalry. And they give themselves. They don't take revenge. It's not like the Iliad is about revenge. It's about revenge because Paris seduced Helena, who was the wife of somebody else. And it's a question of fighting. In the chivalric stories, it's not about revenge. It's about these knights who do whatever they can, and even they are ready to give their lives in order to fight for justice, and for justice and fairness. And fairness, which at that time, fairness was called honor.
Yes.
Honor, okay, yes. Yeah. And what is so interesting that suddenly, compared to the ancient Greek and Roman literature, women are treated very differently. There is a profound respect for women, and there is a cult of women in these stories. These knights are all deeply devoted to the women's honor and fairness. Okay, yeah.
When somebody mentions knights and chivalry, one tends to go to King Arthur and the Knights of the Round Table. And so that, you know, in my mind was basically leading to Le Mort d'Arthur. So Thomas Malory's book on essentially the death of Arthur. Can you tell us a little bit about that? But also then I was fascinated by the contrast of the way Malory gives us Arthur, but then to dear old Mark Twain, who's also a favorite of mine, with Connecticut Yankee and King Arthur's Court, who has a slightly, rather more slight than slightly, different perspective on chivalry and honor.
Right, very, very, yeah. I mean, this legend of King Arthur, which took a couple of centuries to become a coherent one, as we see it in Malory, it has also a tragic aspect, because this kind of courage and honor, courage and fairness, this fight of giving oneself for, sort of implies that human beings can be so perfect, but they cannot, all of them. They cannot. And the story of Lancelot, for instance, he is a strong and heroic knight, but he is unfair to his commander, to King Arthur, because he's living with his wife.
Yes.
So it's a question of adultery. Again, a little bit like in many of the ancient Greek story, the arrows of Aphrodite are dangerous. The erotic aspect of human life is very dangerous. It is very dangerous. But people don't. This is something that nowadays people don't want to hear, but it's not completely untrue. Okay, so young people, be careful. Okay, yeah, about love. Anyway, so what is so beautiful in Mallory is that a long story. The major knights are there. They're always there. Achievement, but the end is still the death, and things do not last forever. There is no end of history there. It's just a sad end of a certain group of knights. Okay. Now about Mark Twain, which I think I read that book when I was 13 or 14, and I loved it because it is so funny. It's so smart. Okay. But I want to mention that the this idealizing type of novels of literature, which present human beings much, much better than they are, or is a long tradition. And on the other side, it was always an equally old tradition to make fun of this and to say, okay, come on, human beings are not like that. Come on, let's laugh at that. And in the Middle Ages, there was a long, huge novel, Reynard the Fox, which is precisely R-E-Y-N-A-R-D, the Fox, which is a parody of this kind of chivalric novel, but at that time, authors were a little bit shy in making fun of the king, the nobility. You have to be careful. No, they were not killed, but I frankly think also they respected them, because they were at that time the police. They were the people who fought against robberies. They were taking care of abusing, obviously, but still, you have to be careful. So they made these parodies, the characters are animals. So this is why Reynard the Fox is a fox, but this fox does the most unbelievable, ugly and stupid things, and he's a crook and always successful. So it's a long tradition, but it is not, when one tries to read it nowadays, it's a bit boring. While the great thing about Mark Twain is that he puts a knight in the real context of America, which is completely different. It's based on a completely new way of handling things, cooperation within a community, rather than having a knight who would give their knights giving their life for you. Okay, so and the comic effect is unbelievable. Yeah.
And I thought it was interesting as well, looking at the fact that chivalric novels were so incredibly popular at one stage, but then there seemed to be a tipping point where all of a sudden then they weren't.
Right. In the 16th century, when people discovered the Ethiopian story and they started to read the Ethiopian story, The French translator was a very erudite classicist at that time. He wrote a long preface in which he said, finally we have a wise novel, not this absurdities about these knights and these witches. And so we can have a real kind of literature. And this was translated into Spanish, when the Spanish translation is from French and includes this preface. And who read it? Cervantes read it. And Cervantes admired immensely the Ethiopian story and despised, together with Amio, he despised this, not all of them, but most chivalric novel. And he wrote himself the first parody of the chivalric novels, which is Don Quixote. Don Quixote is a good guy, not very young, he's in his 50s, and he wants suddenly to become a errant knight. Where in Spain, in a country which had its own administration, it was pretty okay. It didn't need this crazy guy on a horse trying to make justice. So it's the first later. So this was Cervantes had two steps. First step, make fun of the old ones, of the Hilda, and second step, assert the greatness of the of Heliodorus in his last novel. His last novel, Persiles e Sigismunda, that he ended just before dying, is a new version of the of Heliodorus. It's a Christianized Ethiopian story. It's beautiful. That one also, it so happened, I read it when I was in my 20s, and I loved it. I didn't know all these details, but Cervantes had a great talent as a funny author, rather than so. This is why Don Quixote is fantastic. Persiles is very beautiful, but you have to be patient when you read it.
And so, from the perspective of chivalric novels, what do you think they've contributed to the novel as we have it today?
Oh, that's a very good point, a very good question. They reinforced this idealistic vision of human life. Human beings could be heroic, human beings could be chaste, they could respect women in a way that was never done before. Okay, it is possible to assert certain ideas, and that's an important one. Okay. And they don't come only just from your own sort of and it comes from your choice. You can make this choice, and it's very important.
Super. All right, well, we're going to move on in our next episode to epistolary novels. And what I found interesting, as we mentioned in the introduction, is the proliferation of how many of the more popular books throughout time, novels throughout time, have been epistolary, have been serialized, and so I'm really looking forward to getting your thoughts on that. So stay with us. We'll be back with the next episode of A Novel Idea.